Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
And the enemies are wokeism or Marxism combining with Islamism to go after what we call the American way of life. And the American way of life is very simple. I want to be able to get married, buy a home, have kids, allow them to ride their bike till the sun goes down, send them to a good school, have a low-crime neighborhood, not to have my kid be taught the lesbian, gay, transgender garbage in their school. While also not having them have to hear the Muslim call to prayer five times a day. That's important. We want the American way of life, which is, by the way, Christendom. Christians, our sacrifice, our toil, our vision, the outgrowth of the scriptures gave us Western civilization. And this is where I think is a great rallying cry. Doesn't matter if you're Hispanic, doesn't matter if you're Asian, doesn't matter if you're black or white. Everybody, if you are Christian and Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior, these two threats are combining forces to come after us, and it's time that the church stands and rises up against it.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us on your favorite Saturday morning show exclusively here on WEEB. Today, of course, we are going to focus on the life and death of Charlie Kirk this past week, and we are going to talk about what lies ahead, how we honor his legacy as conservatives and as Americans. I'm Steve Woodward, joined as always by David Hensley. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Steve.
It has been a difficult period of time. I guess I should provide some context that up until 2014, 2015, I lived in a suburb of Chicago, which is where Charlie Kirk is from. And so I've been aware of Charlie Kirk and what he's been doing for a very long time, going back almost to the beginning of Turning Point USA. He started that around 2012 when he was 18 years old. And I certainly well remember this young man that very few people had heard of launching this, what at the time was a shoestring operation with no money, no name recognition, but only his will and his spirit. This is a kid who was born with a natural intellect. In fact, he was so aware of that in a humble way that he deliberately avoided going to college because he didn't understand how that was a good use of his time. And he wanted to get to work out on the field promoting conservative values. That's how committed he was, even at that very young age. So, of course, no one could have foreseen that his life would end at such a young age and so suddenly, and how it would end. But here we are, and it is those words that you heard him say as we came on, started the show this morning, that encapsulates the core values that were at the heart of Charlie Kirk. Not always popular, even with some Republicans. He was too conservative sometimes, too honest about how he felt about radical Islamic jihad and how he felt about any kind of compromising of our values when it came to a life as conservatives. And for Charlie, there was no parallel existence between his ideological beliefs and his Christian commitments. Those two were inextricable, and he never apologized for that either. And that, of course, is a big part of his story. Everybody knows that how he died now. I think we can make that assumption. It appears that he was the victim of a professional hit, a well-coordinated assassination. It was not an attempt. It was a successful assassination. One shot and done. We also know that his campus rallies have been growing dramatically in recent years, have gone from being an event where there would be a handful of mostly naysayers and people there to criticize him and sometimes to threaten him. And those college events grew over the years through the 2024 campaign to where they became all-out MAGA rallies, where they had to make sure they arrived with enough hats and T-shirts to satisfy the demand, where he spent as much time autographing and posing for selfies as he did engaging the students in question and answers. And the key component of all of his campus rallies were to engage the students, and especially those who disagreed with him. And if they disagreed with him vehemently, then they essentially moved to the front of the line. He wanted to talk to them first. He was unafraid and could handle any criticism, even the most extreme, even the most absurd, even the most unhinged. He was not deterred at any time by who he encountered on these campuses. But as I say, they've become more like rallies in recent years. And the one at Utah Valley College last Wednesday had all the earmarks of another one of those. It was a beautiful sunny day. There were thousands of people, students in this quad and other people. And of course, we are now finding out that many of his colleagues in Turning Point USA had been concerned increasingly about his safety and security at these big scale open air events on college campuses. But he refused to, add bulletproof glass or to make it less accessible than it had been all these years. So, of course, there will be much second guessing about what might have been. I want to bring in Mr. Hensley now. I've been doing a lot of talking, but I just wanted to set the table. And let's talk a little bit, David, about the nature of Charlie's assassination. This is something that you can't unsee for those of us who have witnessed that video at the moment that we can presume his life ended in nearly a blink of an eye.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to. I mean, I'm sure everyone's seen the video. I don't really want to dwell on that. I mean, we can speculate. It's horrible.
Well, yeah, I don't want to dwell on it either, but I do think it's important that we understand why this person at this point in time was the target of such a well-coordinated, seemingly professional assassination. I mean, this goes beyond somebody snapping and firing off a bunch of rounds of bullets.
Yeah, so let's talk about that in context of just leftism. You know, look, political violence, murder, and assassination has always, always been the tool of the left. And they say, the right, they do all this violence. Show me the violence. I mean, sure, there's a one-off, here and there where some wacko conservative. But, the vast majority of the political violence throughout history has always come from the left. And that's because the left is anarchist, right? So whether it was the Bolsheviks in 1917, whether it was Stalin, right, who killed 20, 30 million. I mean, he starved two-thirds of Ukraine to death, right, in the 30s, right? Whether it was Hitler, because Hitler was a socialist, Pol Pot, Mao, Chairman Mao, Che, you know, the dude in Cuba, right? The two people who, you know, the guys who killed the Kennedys, man, they were leftists, right?
Correct.
The two people who tried to kill Trump, and now, you know, apparently the guy who killed Charlie Kirk. This is, unfortunately, this is not an aberration, and assassination, murder, and violence. I mean, look at Antifa and the rioting in the streets. Look at the BLM riots. Look at Occupy Seattle. Look at the violence on the left. And then they've gotten away. They've gotten away because they control the education, and they've traditionally controlled the media. They've gotten away with convincing people that it's the conservatives who are violent when it's quite the opposite and throughout all of history. So, you know, this has been a wake-up call. You know, the murder of that Ukrainian refugee on the light rail in Charlotte and the murder of the assassination of Charlie Cook are going to be, pun intended, right? And actually in honor of Charlie Cook, it's going to be a turning point in America history because we're not going to take it anymore.
Correct.
You know, the people have woken up, and, you know, well, look at all these horrible, deranged leftists who have come out and, you know, when that CEO got killed in New York, they praised the assassin.
Luigi.
Right. When that monster killed that Ukrainian lady on the light rail in Charlotte, they did a fundraiser for her. And look at
him.
Which
had to be taken down by Give, Send, Go.
Right.
And then we were chided for not properly feeling remorse for his extreme mental illness and the neglect.
That whole thing, did you see a thing about his family? His half-brother's in jail for shooting a white guy in the face randomly a couple years ago, and his father was like a murderer. I mean, this is multi-generational violent crime and murder, right? Because of liberal policies. Anyway, continuing with my thing, I even forgot, but...
No, and now what we're seeing.
Oh, now what we're seeing is look at all the crazed leftists and the stuff, the vile, disgusting. And, you know, Lisa, my wife, made a very good point on social media. You know, people were like, well, I don't remember seeing anyone, you know, mourning when that state senator, you know, in Chicago, wherever,
Minnesota
got killed. Look, there's a difference. Look, I don't expect the left to break down in tears over the murder of Charlie Cook, but I certainly don't expect them to celebrate it, right? And that was Lisa's response online. Lisa rarely says anything online, but a friend of ours, you know, she posted, well, what about when that state representative in Minnesota got killed? You know, blah, blah, you know, why? Where were the conservatives? Well, you'll note the conservatives weren't celebrating it.
Correct.
You know, and that was Lisa's point. You know, the problem is your side is celebrating it. And the left is literally celebrating. And the other point I want to make is let's look at careers that are overrepresented. When you look at all the people celebrating the death of Charlie Kirk, you know, I've noticed government employees, educators, and healthcare workers. It's like those professions have been brainwashed into, you know, believing that political violence is okay. And it's not. And it's not. And a murder of anyone is not to be celebrated. Again, you know, look, you can mourn for the person or not. I mean, you know, as I said earlier, no one's expecting, you know, the left to cry over the murder of a conservative. You should be sad for our country, but, you know, it's absolutely unacceptable to celebrate it. And that's exactly what they do, whether it was the dude that murdered the CEO, whether it was the guy who murdered the Ukrainian refugee, and now Charlie Kirk. That's what they do. The whole leftist movement throughout history have been anarchist, used political violence, murder, and assassination.
And yet when a shooter tried and failed, thankfully, to kill Donald Trump on July 13th, 2024, the fact that he came within an eyelash of dying in front of us in high-definition television, that was quickly replaced by the narrative of, well, gee, this poor kid up on the roof, has a history of, family neglect and... also, the Secret Service, they were negligent, and it never was about really the target. The narrative was all about everything but Donald Trump.
You know what it was never about? It was never about, and this is the cause, right? Whether it's you know, the gray hair crowd, you know, marching in, you know, a Southern Pines Park, you know, no kings or whatnot, or it's political assassinations or school shooters. You know what they never talk about? They never talk about the legacy media and their 12-year drumbeat about Trump's a Nazi, MAGA people are Nazis, we need to kill Nazis. Anyway, you know, the mainstream media has been demonizing conservatives for a generation, and it's been getting increasing. And then, you know, people get brainwashed, and it's reached the point where they think assassination's acceptable.
And of course, that will never be the case. But you make the excellent point that we are told repeatedly that it is our so-called rhetoric, because we support Donald Trump and his Make America Great Again initiative, that somehow is inflaming the masses and causing people to become unhinged, and we better dial it back, or else we're going to be responsible for more of it.
Right. We're not. Look at Moore County. There's a group of people, mainly in, you know, of course, South County and Southern Pines and Pinehurst, that you know, they call people fascists. You know, and I kill. They say, like, MAGA's fascist, and I kill fascists. I'm a fascist hunter, right? Mm-hmm. So they call people. They call us fascists. They call us Nazis. Then they turn around and say, "I kill fascists. I'm a fascist hunter." There's two or three people that do that regularly. There's a transgender graduate of one of our high schools who has posted several. He's in his 20s now, and he's posting stuff like, "The school board wants to kill us." And, right. You know, that is, you know, that's going to result in violence. And it's not going to be the conservatives do the violence. They keep saying that. They keep beating the drum. And there's someone out there crazy enough to start shooting or stabbing. And that's how that's going to unfold.
So let's talk a little bit about Charlie Kirk's legacy and what he has accomplished in just over three decades on this earth. And really just barely over a decade, you know, in the limelight through Turning Point USA. I think it's important to talk about the fact that there are many mainstream conservatives out there who consume a lot of the traditional content, who watch a lot of Fox News, who, you know, read the Wall Street Journal and other conservative publications, and don't really venture out much beyond that very limited universe. And for a lot of those people, you know, I have a feeling that Charlie Kirk was always something of a curiosity, a name that they were beginning to hear more about, but may not have understood the influence that he actually had. I thought it was very interesting that yesterday, only hours after Charlie had been killed, the Vice President J.D. Vance posted a very long tweet on X, known as Twitter to most of us, paragraphs long, talking about how it was Charlie Kirk who convinced him, J.D. Vance, to run for Senate in 2021 when Vance didn't really think he had much of a chance. It was Charlie Kirk who introduced him to the most influential donors to TPUSA, which by 2021 were already quite substantial. It was Charlie Kirk whose Turning Point USA during the Trump Vance campaign hosted several of the most effective campaign events out on the road, not the Trump Vance campaign, but Turning Point USA, because of the enthusiastic youth vote that they were able to mobilize in these arenas. This just tells you that And basically, J.D. Vance concludes by saying he really helped us staff our government after Trump was elected. He was an insider in Mar-a-Lago following the elections of the election of last November. That was one area where he was a dramatic force of nature. Secondly, every day, 5 days a week, the Charlie Kirk Show, on streaming, on radio, a two-hour show that I consumed very regularly. At noon, or you can listen to it, the archived versions of it when you're driving or whatever. He had on some of the most influential guests. His guest list, we don't call it a Rolodex anymore. His phone contact list was such that he could get anyone at any time on the show. Senators, call-ins from Donald Trump, political strategists, you name it. They were on his program all the time, and some of the best talk show content was delivered by Charlie Kirk. So finally, the campus outreach, the recruiting of these young conservatives, these chapters growing in leaps and bounds on the college campuses, and then the shift of emphasis to the high schools, where they now have thousands of chapters and more to come each and every year. And the impact of that on the 2024 election cannot be understated. The youth vote that was fired up by Turning Point USA and by the raw willpower of Charlie Kirk and his team to get out the vote, to get out there and do what they called the ballot chasing, literally, not the low propensity voters, but the high propensity voters, to make sure they got out and voted. They had the ballot. They knew where to go on election day or during early voting, but just to make sure that these people, the most informed, were actually voting, and they got them out in big numbers, and that turned the election. That was a major reason why among the swing states that we carried were Arizona and Michigan, where they really focused, those two states. So that was the three-pronged Charlie Kirk presence out there, and that is why his loss is so devastating.
Let me talk a bit about his presence on college campuses. There is no doubt that his presence on college campuses and the time and energy that he invested over, a decade doing that, a long time, it swung the election. I mean, there's a lot of things you could say swung the election for Trump, but certainly among those it was his work on college campuses. And, he was gaining in popularity. He was 31, got to be 35 to be president. He was clearly a future presidential candidate, if not president. But let me talk about his presence on college campuses. I had daughters that one attended Alabama, the other one's finishing up at Ole Miss. And, they are mourning. Colleges are mourning, just like the liberal institutions, hung up Black Lives Matter banners and all that. And that was all organized and paid for because, Soros swept in and there was, at Ole Miss, I've seen pictures, people painted God Bless Charlie Kirk, people made, painted blankets and are hanging out. And there was an employee at Ole Miss who, of course, couldn't help herself but, celebrate the death of Charlie Cook like a good leftist do, like disgusting leftists do. And the students rose up and demand she be fired. It wasn't activists, that were sending stuff to the school. The students demand she got fired. And they fired her within hours, right? And the chancellor sent out an email to the students, and cheers erupted in the campus because, the students are tired. Look, the young people today, although there are outliers, the young people today, you know, they lived through COVID, you know, they got their proms and all taken away from the left. They've seen all the wacky stuff that the left does. And although most of them are not politically active, you know, they're just not, and they avoid talking about it. That's what their generation does. They are far, far, far more conservative than people give them credit for. Far more conservative. A lot of that is the result of Charlie Kirk's effort.
Turning Point USA across the fruited plain. And that is not an overstatement whatsoever. And yet, you know, you mentioned the one employee at Ole Miss. We've read in recent days about a dean at Middle Tennessee State who posted that she had zero regret about Trump, about Charlie's death. That he brought on what he had coming, essentially, to paraphrase. She was quickly fired, to the credit of that school. We saw that an MSNBC clown named Matthew Dowd. This is before. You know, the blood has dried.
Right, the day of, literally, they were still speculating, oh, that must have been a MAGA supporter playing with their gun, accidentally shot him, right? It was during that stage,
yes,
right?
Yes, that was one of the disgusting things that somebody said, probably as a joke, but it was not taken as such. And Matthew Dowd basically said, well, you know, when you spew the kind of rhetoric that that Charlie Kirk was known for, what do you expect? I mean, basically... dismissing his assassination as inevitable to some degree. He's now been, we're told, has lost his job. I wouldn't be surprised if he slithers back into a new contract when we're not looking someday.
Let me, can I bring that locally? Locally, you know, the Department of Defense has their own schools. You know, it was mainly set up for overseas, but, you know, big bases have their own DOD schools. And I've been saying, if you remember back, you know, Rolly Sampson and all that nastiness and all that activism. I said that the DOD schools, certainly it started under Obama, but, you know, certainly accelerated under Biden. The DOD schools became a cesspool of leftist activism. And there was a teacher at the DOD school at Fort Bragg who posted, you know, vapid, you know, happy that, you know, Charlie Kirk got assassinated stuff. And she was celebrating Charlie Kirk's death and was happy about it. And you know what? They fired her that day. She made the post, like, you know, the day of the assassination. And Pete Hegseth and DOD, thank God, they fired her the next day. But those people are, she lives in Cameron.
Yeah,
those people are among us.
Exactly. Exactly right.
And you know, she previously, according to her LinkedIn bio, she previously taught, I looked her up, she's a registered Democrat. She only voted here once in 2024, right? And prior to that, she taught in DOD schools in Korea, right? So she's obviously a military dependent, military spouse. And God knows what poison she's been putting in the children of military families the whole time she's been teaching in DOD schools.
Yeah, and you know, they do live among us. They dwell among us. And not all of them are outspoken or obvious about how they feel, but you know, we can well recall in the days after the assassination attempt on Donald Trump that you know, it didn't take long for the left to they slowly were no longer able to conceal the fact that they would have been just fine if the greasy-headed shooter on the roof in Butler, Pennsylvania, had been a little bit more accurate, and if Trump hadn't turned his head at the right moment.
Oh, many of them didn't even try to disguise that. And I'm talking major personalities, Hollywood actors, actresses, media personalities, news, so-called news people. The other point I want to make, Steve, and we were talking about this a little bit during our extensive show prep, But, you know, I was struck the day after the shooting, right? Oh, by the way, one of the things that my girl that's at Ole Miss, about halfway through the day after the shooting, she's like, there's an eerie feeling at Ole Miss. Like the whole campus was just kind of wandering around in shock. And again, that shows his impact. God, I forgot where I was. But what surprised me the day after the shooting in my work, you know, I just run into a lot of different people, different nationalities, different walks of life, different social economic backgrounds, and people across all social economic backgrounds, from very wealthy people to, you know, very poor people, people of all races. I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked at the number of people who just brought up in conversation that they were mourning the death of, you know, however they said it, they don't say I was mourning. But it was amazing that people from all walks of life and people who you would have never even expected that received his message, that actually received his message and were touched by what he did and his assassination. I was shocked by it.
I wanted to share a portion of what the staff at Turning Point USA posted as of this morning on their website. All of them, of course, having, I'm sure, not slept, and several of them were there within, you know, very close proximity to Charlie. And of course, there's the eerie video of about six of them carrying his body to an SUV. At that point, it was probably a futile effort to get him to a hospital. But this morning, they shared this, and I think it's worth noting. I won't read the whole thing, but just the opening couple of sentences. Every one of us at Turning Point USA is crushed and devastated by the hateful murder of our founder and guiding light, Charlie Kirk. All of us have lost a leader, a mentor, and a friend. Above all, our hearts are with his wife, Erica, and their two children. Charlie was the ideal husband and the perfect father. More than anyone, Charlie believed in the power of argument and good faith debate to find the truth and guide people towards, if not agreement, then at least mutual understanding. We could use some of that. Charlie was no stranger to threats. He received thousands throughout his life, but he always prioritized reaching as many young Americans as possible over his own personal safety. Now Charlie has become America's greatest martyr to the freedom of speech he so adored. I thought that was a very beautifully said and very timely as well. It is difficult to comprehend, even with the passage of a few days, that Charlie Kirk is gone, and not just Charlie Kirk, the man and the father and the husband, and the leader of a movement, but the fact that someone took a shot at an entire ideological worldview, one that, by the way, swept a presidential election just less than a year ago, last November. And yet, so many on the left have spent the last several days trying to, I guess I would say, conflate the assassination with other political violence, trying to draw some kind of moral equivalency when it doesn't exist. And I find that both tedious and also kind of repugnant in many ways. You know, little Jamie Raskin, he's the little congressman from Maryland. He comes out of the Capitol a few hours after the shooting, and the press gathers around him and asked him to comment on Charlie Kirk's death, and he kind of shrugged as if to say, well, you know, what do you want me to say about Charlie Kirk? You know, I'm you know, unhinged Democrat Jamie Raskin. You're not expecting me to say anything nice, are you? And he said, oh, and by the way, don't forget that three students were shot at a high school in Colorado today as well, meaning Wednesday. And he's right about that. The shooter ended up deceased. The other two were not seriously wounded at all. So really not an apples to apples comparison. Any school shooting is, of course, terrible news. But at that particular moment in time, to try to shift the focus away from this very well coordinated assassination seemed, even for a little worm like Jamie Raskin, sort of beyond the pale, I would have to say.
You know, let me interject. I'm gonna sidetrack for a minute. You mentioned Jamie Raskin. I missed another seminal moment of political violence. You remember what, a decade ago, when that crazy leftist pulled up to where the Republicans were practicing for the congressional baseball game, and yes. he asked one question. He's like, "Are these the Republicans practicing?" And his bystanders said yes, and he walked to his car and he pulled out a rifle and he started randomly shooting Republican congressmen. That is another example yep. of leftist violence. So, yep. you know, I challenge anyone. Look, the guys who killed the Kennedys, they were leftists. The guy who killed Martin Luther King, leftist. I challenge anyone. The guy who killed Lincoln was a leftist Democrat, right?
Right.
I challenge anyone to provide more than like one or two out. I mean, of course, there's always an outlier. But again, throughout history, the congressional shooting. Someone point to me the political violence from the right.
Yeah.
And they'll say, Timothy McVeigh. Okay, name the next one.
Yeah.
Come on, I'm waiting. Name the next
one. Exactly.
I can rattle off, you know, 100 of them that killed literally 100 million people in the 20th century.
Yeah, you can't. There is no laundry list to be found. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, there's an outlier here or there. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy at the baseball practice in Alexandria, Virginia, you know, he, were it not for some very brave and reactive security guards, right. we would have lost all manner of congressmen that day.
Right.
Ron DeSantis was on that baseball field, now the governor of Florida.
Yeah.
He could very well be deceased. Steve Scalise was very close to death, even after days of treatment in the hospital. He was very touch and go for him for a long time. And there were others. Most of them just, you know, hit the deck and hope they didn't get shot. And
on a completely bare, you talk about, you know, when you're under gunfire, right? You know, you duck down and you just can't get low enough. I mean, you're like, crap, man. I wish, you know what I'm saying? I couldn't imagine being on an open baseball field getting shot at.
And, you know, that is one of the things that unfortunately we're going to have to really revisit with the Charlie Kirk assassination. You know, like a lot of people, I've been worrying for a long time about these campus appearances that he's making. But you figure, okay, you go out to Utah. That's about the most benign place you can go. There's not a lot of radical lefties out there.
Well, it apparently only takes one.
It takes one. And he probably wasn't even from Utah. But that venue made Charlie such a sitting duck. You know, the venue was a courtyard with a sort of an amphitheater type of configuration, where he was at the bottom of this incline, and then off in the distance are all these elevated structures,
right? Parking garages.
It was like a shooting range,
right? Easily accessible structures.
And of course, they're going to start second guessing the campus security, and unfortunately, the Turning Point organization's planning. Although his right hand man, Andrew Covet, was saying, in one of the programs I was listening to the morning after, that, you know, they always have a very extensive discussion with campus security and local law enforcement before they do a campus event. They don't just show up. There's a lot of logistical planning that goes into it. So this was, again, something that could not have been foreseen, given the fact that there hasn't been there have not been a lot of credible threats in these previous years of campus visits. But, you know, Charlie Kirk, in a very eerie fashion, foresaw the possibility that the ascendancy of the MAGA movement and Donald Trump could bring us to a point where we haven't been in quite a number of years, which is the targeting of political figures by gunmen. Back in the summer of 2024, just prior to Steve Bannon's departure for 4 months in a federal prison, and prior to the shooting of the shooting attempt on Trump in Butler, Pennsylvania, just weeks prior, Charlie was on with Bannon. I don't know if he was on his show or Bannon was on Charlie's show. It doesn't matter. And Charlie brought up the prospect of what might happen to Trump going forward. Play clip two.
She's trying to get out the visual and the idea of assassinating Donald Trump. This is where this is headed. I hope everyone understands. Whether it be Julius Caesar, Julius Caesar, Abraham Lincoln, John F. Kennedy, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., Bobby Kennedy, assassinations of major political leaders are nothing new. And yet we've kind of been immune to that for a couple of decades. We have been warning about this for months. Now, the very interesting question is, will they try to kill Joe Biden or Donald Trump? That's the interesting question. Which one right now is a bigger threat to them? And that I'll let the audience kind of ruminate on that question. But we've been warning about this for quite some months. This is why the next man up philosophy is so important and why we wanted to do the show with you, Steve, as a show of force, is that you take one out, 100 more appear. You take one out, 1,000 more appear. You take one out, 10,000 more appear. You take one out, we give more money. You take one out, we register more voters. You take one out, is that it only actually makes us stronger.
That's fairly incredible that he went down that path, and now he is the victim of what he
We need to register more voters. We need to create 1,000 more, 10,000 more Charlie Cooks, and we need to do exactly what he said. I would like to point something out that I never thought of until just now. But did you notice when Charlie Kirk got shot, he had a personal security detail. It looked like it was about six guys, right, wearing suits. They immediately rendered for trauma aid, They immediately got him off that shelf, and they immediately got him into a waiting, backed-up SUV. And here's my point. Charlie Kirk's personal security detail was more organized and more reactive than Joe Biden's Secret Service that was protecting Trump. Remember when Trump got shot? And there were the Secret Service. I mean, there were two groups at Trump's at the day he got shot. There was his personal detail, right? And then there were the people that Biden provided. The people who reacted quickly and looked professional, those were his full-time detail. The other ones who, like, didn't know how to draw their gun and stuff, those were the people that Biden added on. But the point is, if you remember when Trump got shot, half the Secret Service agents didn't know what to do. And then the car that they had to take him to was parked way too far away. And then there was a locked gate that no one seemed to, or a barricaded gate that someone knew seemed to have a key to, right? Mm-hmm. The point is Charlie Kirk's private personal security detail was more organized, more reactive, and did a much better job than the U.S. Secret Service run by Joe Biden did. That is absolutely shameful.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I'm thankful, and unfortunately it just wasn't enough, but boy, that's worth noting, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'll never forget that. The Secret Service agent who was literally could not get the gun out of the holster. The other one who was juggling, trying to decide what to protect, the president or her Ray-Bans. You know, it was a clown show.
Yeah.
And of course, in that moment in time, we did not know that he had been fortunate enough to have only received this flesh wound to his ear, which turned out to be relatively minor. We didn't know if there were other bullets lodged in the man's body. We didn't even know if he was going to rise up from the stage the way he did.
Right.
And you know, one of the videos that they played in the aftermath of Charlie's death was him talking about how he was going to talk to his son someday when he's a little older about Donald Trump and his relationship to Trump, who, by the way, was considered a personal friend, not merely just a someone who called into the show from time to time. He was considered a good friend, as was Donald Trump Jr., was extremely close to Charlie from the start. But he, but Charlie talked about that, and he said, you know, when my son is older, I want to tell him that the man you want to be is the one who stands after he's been shot and raises his fist into the air and urges the crowd to fight, to not give up, to keep going. That's the kind of person that I want my son to admire when he gets older. And of course, that was the very kind of person that Charlie Kirk himself was, not necessarily in the not necessarily in the sense of you know, the physical fist pumping and that kind of thing, but in the way he conducted himself, the way in which he without fear went into the fray all the time and took on all comers. And of course, the way he lived with the need for increasing security and increasing concern about his safety. One of the interesting stories that was told over the past few days was Charlie being at an event. I think it was maybe one of the Trump campaign events last summer. And afterward, he and several very high-profile members of Fox News went out to get a bite to eat. They were at some bar in a fairly small town. It was a smaller town, not a lot of places to go. And they went into this one place, and they sat down. And over the next hour or so, all of the foot traffic that approached their table had only one request. They did not want the autograph of any of the Fox News personalities. They wanted to know if one or more of the Fox News personalities would please take the selfie with Charlie Kirk. Huh. That they were like, "You, I think I recognize you from Fox.
Yeah, can you take this picture,
you know,
please?
Bill Hemmer, can you take a shot of me and Charlie?" He said that went on for like an hour, and nobody ever asked for an autograph or a photo with a single Fox News personality, which, you know, Charlie would not have necessarily enjoyed that, because above all, he was intensely unassuming and never looking to be the center of attention. Far from it, in fact. He wanted those college students to feel like they were the future of this movement, and in fact now they are. They're going to lead us forward from this day. Of course, we'll be warned now to tone it down, lest the bloodshed kind of becomes the norm, and that'll be our blood they're talking about, not theirs. And they'll urge us to go easy on the Christianity and quit celebrating the nuclear family and raising children. And
well, that's why they hated him. Did you see Charlie Kirk's beautiful family? I mean, he obviously had a beautiful, loving wife. He had two beautiful children. He was the epitome of the nuclear family, and he espoused traditional values. That's why they hated him. The left's hatred of any sort of nuclear family, traditional family, I mean, they hate him enough for that to kill him and to celebrate his death. Nothing right. more than that. Nothing more than he's got a beautiful family, and he articulates and defends rhetorically, successfully, traditional values. And all these people hate him and celebrate him and cheer his death solely because of that. What has he done to them? Nothing.
Well, he
hasn't thrown a brick. He hasn't struck anyone. He hasn't committed a crime. He engaged people in debate.
But the one thing he's done to them that they do not forgive is that he has found a significant chunk of the American population that believes the way he does, and have brought them out from the shadows. And brought them into a place where they're proud to wear the hat, wear the T-shirt, put the sign in the yard, mm-hmm. and they say, well, if this young man can be this brave and this courageous, then I can do it too. You know, I can do my part, and that's all we can ask as we go forward. Of course, they will also blame us for any future violence on pointing out that all of the crime and high murder rates are in Democrat-run cities. And, of course, right. They'll condemn us for our continued support of Israel. They'll wonder why we don't see the genocide, as they call it, that is being perpetrated on Palestine. Of course, any mentions of the greatness of America and making it even greater, those have to stop, lest there be violence. And, of course, we must never draw attention to the mentally ill when they stab innocent girls on trains or fire bullets into a Catholic mass. That's we have to understand that they are the victims, because we as a society have driven their mental illness. How we do that, they never quite say, but they believe it.
That's what's changed. The murder of that Ukrainian refugee in Chicago, as I call Charlotte, and the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Look, at first, people used to believe that nonsense claims, like you said, we got to pity him, and we got to blah, blah, restorative justice. At first, people believed that. Then it moved to, well, let's just ignore them, you know, let them flap their gums, and, you know, the marginal, just don't listen to them. Now, the turning point is we're going to actively stand up for our values, and we're going to shout them down. We're no longer going to tolerate it. It's going to be refuted, from every angle. Every student at Ole Miss they're just not going to do it. People are going to start refuting that and not tolerating it. And that's what we, instead of just being a handful of voices, you and me and a handful of others, there's going to be thousands of us. There's going to be thousands of Charlie Kirks, because everyone now sees it for what it is.
Yeah.
And what it leads to. And by the way, it's the historical nature of things. As I said, from the Bolsheviks to Stalin to Pol Pot to Mao to Che to the dude who shot up the congressional baseball, political violence and assassination, BLM riots, Occupy. I mean, I rattled them off earlier. That is what the left is, and we're not going to take it anymore. It's like our theme song.
Exactly right. And I guarantee you, this December, as he's had been doing now for several years, the organization will host a major youth rally event in mid-December. It's about 4 days. It's sort of CPAC for college kids.
The Woodstock of conservatism.
I believe it's called AmeriFest. I guarantee you this one will attract record attendance.
Oh, 100%.
Like you've never seen before. And a record roster of political luminaries, also as we've never, ever seen before. We've had a lot to talk about today. And we thank you, as always, for joining us. I would be remiss, and I will not be remiss. I will mention that our sponsor is the Marketplace Restaurant and Catering since 1980. Great place for your breakfast and your lunch and your catering needs. The Marketplace, right there off of Highway 211 in beautiful Pinehurst. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, we thank you for being a part of this program today. We hope that you will continue to pray for the family of Charlie Kirk and his colleagues at Turning Point USA. I am Steve Woodward. He is David Hensley. We hope you'll join us again, because what we like to do each and every Saturday is get together. And when we do, we're always
taking aim.
See you next time.